Welcome to Tandem with the Random, a bi-weekly podcast featuring interesting people doing interesting things from all different walks of life. In this installment, we'll hear from author Gary Ween, who has just released his second book, Are You Listening?, which profiles what he has ranked as the top 100 albums by New Jersey recording artists from 2001 to 2010. Gary talks about the book, his connections with the Asbury Park music scene, and his thoughts on the passing of E Street Band saxophone player Clarence Clemons. That conversation and more are just ahead on Tandem with the Random for Monday, June 27th, 2011. Now here is your host, Brian Kelly. Hello, and thank you for joining me for another episode of Tandem with the Random. My name is Brian Kelly, and I'm your host for this podcast. Our guest this week is author Gary Ween. 8 years ago, he released Beyond the Palace, a comprehensive look at the Asbury Park, New Jersey music scene from the 1960s to 2003. Today, he has just released his follow-up book, Are You Listening?, which profiles what he has ranked as the top 100 albums released by New Jersey artists from 2001 to 2010. For the latest book, Ween listened to more than 2,000 albums, ranging from national acts with New Jersey origins like Bruce Springsteen, Fountains of Wayne, and My Chemical Romance, to rarely heard CDs released by unsigned bands during that time. We'll hear Ween talk about how he went about compiling the information for the book and about his connections to the Asbury Park music scene. But that conversation is coming up in a bit. First, a few random thoughts. First, obviously, I need to apologize for the delay in getting this podcast online. Obviously, we're a week behind schedule at this point, but that was due to some work commitments and a planned mini vacation up to New Haven, Connecticut, to visit some friends, and that was actually a pretty good time. We attended some events associated with the International Festival of Arts and Ideas taking place in New Haven, and that included a couple of free walking tours, the City Point section of New Haven, a very historic neighborhood, and we also toured a few churches along the edge of the square in downtown New Haven. Including two churches located on the Yale campus. We also attended a concert by Emmeline Michelle, known as the Queen of Haitian Song, that was fantastic. And we saw the Great Dinosaur exhibit at the Yale Peabody Museum. In addition, we also ate lunch at Lewis's Lunch, the birthplace of the hamburger, and had an amazing grilled cheese sandwich from the Casey's Cheese Truck. And overall, we had a great time with our friends Karen and Bob, which also included semi-intoxicated games of Trivial Pursuit and Mealborn, which is the French card game based on driving. And if you haven't played that, do so a little tipsy. It's never safe to drink and drive, but you can always drink and play a card game based on driving. And that is fun. Also want to welcome any new visitors to the site and to the podcast who were brought over from the Fatty Gets a Stylist Artist to Watch post that I put on the blog a few weeks ago. Fatty Gets a Stylist actually shared that on their Facebook page and via Twitter, which brought quite a few people over to the site. So if you're still around, welcome, and hopefully you'll stick around a little bit. And if you want to learn more about Fatty Gets a Stylist, check out the Artist to Watch post. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. The lead singer is an Australian singer-songwriter by the name of Kate Miller-Heidke, who opened for Ben Folds last year, and she's phenomenal. But this new project, Fatty Gets a Stylist, it's a little bit different, but it's really fun pop music, and it's the way pop music should sound. You know, not Lady Gaga, not Katy Perry, not manufactured bubblegum. Fatty Gets a Stylist is the way pop music should be, in my opinion. Anyway, this month marked 25 years since I first saw Peter Gabriel live at the Amnesty International Conspiracy of Hope show at Giant Stadium on June 15, 1986. And this past weekend, my wife and I went to our first Peter Gabriel show together, and it was, as usual, amazing. Unlike previous Gabriel shows I've been to, this time out, he was backed by a full orchestra dubbed the New Blood Orchestra, and performed a few songs from last year's Scratch My Back CD of orchestral covers, as well as orchestral arrangements of his classic catalog of songs, including Salisbury Hill, Red Rain, Biko, and Wallflower. One of my favorite Peter Gabriel songs, especially live, is Secret World from 1993's Us album. Secret World had not been played on the current tour coming into Saturday night's show in Camden, but I'd heard they were working on it during rehearsals, so I was so happy when they played it, and it turned out to be one of the highlights of the evening. Please check out the YouTube video and embed it in the show notes to check out that performance of Secret World. It was freaking amazing. And I must say there's a Doctor Who connection with the New Blood Orchestra, because I always will find a Doctor Who connection. As the conductor is the fantastic Ben Foster, who is the orchestrator and conductor for Doctor Who, and is the primary music composer for its spin-off sci-fi show, Torchwood. And apparently my wife thinks he's the hottest orchestra conductor ever. So there's that. But it was just awesome to be in Peter Gabriel's presence again. Unless you've been to one of his shows, it's really hard to explain how powerful an experience it is. And having the orchestra behind him just added so much more weight to his music. It made it even more amazing. Well, after this short musical break, we'll hear from Gary Ween, author of Are You Listening? Stay tuned. My guest for this podcast is Gary Ween, author of Beyond the Palace, a comprehensive look at the Asbury Park, New Jersey music scene from the 1960s to 2003. He also launched the internet radio station thepenguinrocks.com in 2005 and runs the website newjerseystage.com. He has a new book out now called Are You Listening, which ranks his top 100 albums by New Jersey artists from 2001 to 2010. Gary, thanks for joining us on Tandem with the Random.
Thanks for having me.
So Gary, why don't you first start out by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with the New Jersey music scene?
Well, when I was growing up, I was actually kind of in the scene a little bit as a teenager. We used to go to the clubs in Asbury Park, and I got to know the longtime DJ there, Lee Murky, and he used to take me under his wing, I guess. He had a little place right by the Pony where he made the T-shirts, and he would let me hang out with him and hear about the bands, and he would tell me stories about the scene. And around that time, a museum was started, like the Jersey Shore Rock and Roll Museum. It was in the Palace Amusements Building, and I got to know those guys and was hanging out and would hear the stories. And then, as luck have it, I was working in restaurants, and a waitress heard me playing John Eddy in the kitchen once, and said, "Oh, do you like John? You should meet my husband. You know, John played at our wedding, and my husband's a sound man." Turned out he was one of the biggest sound men on the East Coast. And in the late 80s, he got me involved in these great shows that WNEW of New York put on in the beach in Asbury Park. And so I did several of those shows and got to meet a lot of the artists. And at the time, I was going to school and I knew I wanted to be a writer, but I had visions of Rolling Stone or Spin or something like that. And obviously when you're growing up and, you're backstage at the Pony all the time and things like that, those dreams don't sound, so far-fetched. But what happened is after college, I kind of went a slightly different route for a while and did some other things other than actual pure writing, did some computer work for a while. And one day in the early 2000s, I was celebrating my wife's birthday at a restaurant, and a band was setting up. And I'm like, they sound like this band Soul Engines that I grew up. It was one of the bands that my friends and I, we grew up loving that band and always saw them. And we were close enough to the stage that the guy actually heard me and then started playing a Soul Engine song. And I hadn't seen them in maybe 15 years. In between sets, I went over and started talking to him, and I realized just how much I missed hanging out and talking with musicians. And that kind of inspired Beyond the Palace. It was more or less an idea of trying to find all the bands that we grew up with. A lot of them were always on the verge of making it. Like the band I just mentioned, Soul Engines, they had sold 3,000 to 5,000 copies of a CD on their own, and were being signed to major labels. And I always wondered what happened that next step. And the book was basically about trying to find these people and find out what their story was. What, you know, why aren't they you know, national legends? And so that kind of got me started with that. And then after the book, I decided to really give music writing a shot, and started an arts entertainment magazine called Upstage, and ran that for a few years. And then financial duties required me to get a more steady writing job, but having a regular job allows me to do the projects, and that's what Are You Listening was about. I've got a lot of book projects on the shelf that I'm hoping to have come out in the next few years. Some of them are local music, and then some of them are more national, international-based projects.
Oh, excellent. Just going back to Beyond the Palace for a minute, doing that kind of research, and you know, I've seen bits and pieces of the book and the interviews that you did. It must have been a pretty big struggle to track down some of these people, track down some of this material for the research. Why don't you just talk a little bit about that?
Well, the funny thing is, nowadays people really don't have an idea just how much work went into it. This was the early days of internet websites for musicians. If I started the book today, I probably could finish it in a week and a half. That's how much easier it is to find people now. In 2002, it's amazing thinking back at just how many musicians did not have websites, how many fan sites were not there that are there today. I mean, today you can find fan websites for a band that may have sold 10 albums. It wasn't there. The good thing is I was starting at a point where I still knew a few very key people, and that kind of helped mushroom everything. I mean, I got back in touch with Lee, who I hadn't seen in quite a while, and as a DJ at the Stone Pony for probably about the first 20 years of the club, he had a lot of connections, and you know, he helped me find some more of the people that I was looking at, and then, you know, other people would find people for me, and just endless searching on Google, Yahoo, you name it, every search engine that was around back then. You know, you'd find bits and pieces, and then other bits and pieces, and then you'd track down things. You know, in the end, it wound up being a pretty successful accomplishment as far as who I found. I mean, I was very fortunate to, like, track down all the members of Dramarama, which I didn't know I'd do. I found all the members of the band Red House, which I didn't know I'd do. I even found most of the a band that used to play with Springsteen Steel Mill. I found all the band members of this band from Virginia that were their counterpart. And that was, you know, just luck of the draw with the internet. One thing led to another, and you know, interviewing somebody, and maybe he might have known one other person in the band or something like that. And it's also because a lot of the bands obviously have, like, family trees where they played with other bands.
Right.
You know? And so, like a friend of yours, for example, John Pfeiffer, you know, he had played in two of the bands that were in the book.
Right.
And so, you know, it was a little bit like that. It was interview somebody, maybe track down something. A couple of the writer friends I knew helped with it with some things, and just a lot of just blind luck, hoping to you know, find a phone number somewhere. But like I said, it's amazing thinking about it. I mean, there's a website where you can, you know, see old websites on the web, and you can see when they started. And it's amazing when you even look at some of the most national artists, like an artist like Bruce Springsteen. In 2001, he barely had a website.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of funny thinking about where I was starting from, and then now I could just probably go into Facebook and find everybody.
Exactly. Yeah. So let's talk about Are You Listening? And you started going to it, but what made you decide to write a book like that with a ranking of the top albums of an entire decade? And why don't you explain the process of how you compiled that final list?
I don't know if there was actually a real moment of inspiration for that book. I honestly thought it'd be easier One day I was giving a tour of Asbury Park to a band from Canada, and Beyond the Palace was selling in Asbury Park, but I had never seen it. It was the first bookstore that I never actually supplied books to that was selling it. And every time I was in this place, they never had the copy. So I honestly didn't know who was selling my book. Anyway, I'm giving this band from Canada a tour, and there's the book. And it was, it's a good feeling, actually, when you see it in a place that you had nothing to do with. And I said to myself, it's time to get another one out there on the shelves. And I think I thought it would be an easy project, but I had no idea just how many releases were actually out there. I personally had probably about 600 or 700 records from the decade that I started with, and then searching online, I just kept finding more and more and more. So what I thought was going to be an easy project wound up being like 4 months of research and 4 months of writing, and just a lot more intensive than I thought. But I like the idea of covering the decade for a variety of reasons. One, on a personal note, it was really the first decade that I actually made money as a music writer. So this was almost like a little personal scrapbook of a lot of what my work was. I mean, I didn't solely concentrate on New Jersey, but I definitely had had that as a specialty, I guess you'd say. Another reason was it's a very unique decade. I mean, with 9/11 happening so early on, it being in the tri-state area, when I did Beyond the Palace, it was after 9/11, and I remember how much that affected the people then, songwriting-wise. And I was thinking, well, I wonder how that affected the entire decade. And sure enough, I found artists early on, I found artists later on, where just the whole aspect of 9/11 has never left the tri-state area, and you see it in the songs. And so I thought that was kind of interesting to kind of take a snapshot of that era. And along with that idea is, 10 years is a long time. We have songwriters that were coming of age in this decade that grew up literally with war, always.
Right.
And that's something that, I'm in my 40s, and we didn't have it, And I wondered, well, how does somebody that's, coming of age in their 20s, right when they're, in that creative boom, how are they dealing with the fact that they've seen war for, like, really almost every year of their life? And so I thought that was an interesting topic to kind of see, just how everything played out. And then there's one other final note, and that is, as I do have an online radio station, I've seen in the last few years, obviously, the industry is getting away from physical properties. It's CDs are on their way out, just as albums did, and just like 8-tracks did and tapes did. More and more artists are not only just releasing albums digitally, but they're going back and doing digital singles. So the actual concept of an album, I think, is going to die very soon. The decade 2001 to 2010, that was the first decade that computer software like Pro Tools and home recording studios had, sophisticated equipment enough that you could do, you could easily have a 24-track studio in your house and record something that would have been state-of-the-art, just a few years before. And so this was a decade where anybody could record a brilliant album, and it probably is the last time somebody will conceive of an entire album.
Right.
So there's a lot of ideas why that decade, I think, it's very unique. It's very I don't think we're going to see something like that on many levels.
Right. And I want to just talk about the process. I know there was a sophisticated ranking method you used for this, involving a database and entering all this data into it. Why don't you just talk about how you came up with this final list of the top 100 CDs?
It's kind of funny. Even last night, talking with a lot of the music writers can't seem to really comprehend totally that I didn't pick the top 100. I did in a way, but I didn't pick the order or anything like that. I don't think you could. Doing a top 100 for a year is a difficult thing. Doing it for 10 different years is insane to try and, you know, actually physically tick, this one should be number 7, this one should be 27. So what I did was I created pretty much every album. The only albums that didn't get a grade were the ones that absolutely were horrific. But I wound up having probably like 2,000 records graded, put them in a MySQL database, and just let it spit out the top 100, and that's what I worked with. And then, I mean, the grading process, there, you know, it was everything from grading songs, bonus points for, you know, X amount of songs that were of the, you know, top ranking. There was a lot of ways of doing it, and it actually wound up, the top 100, there weren't like 150 ties or anything like that. It somehow the math worked, where it gave me 100 names, and the 100 names actually made a lot of sense to me, so that was good to work with. And then those 100, I wound up listening to, you know, every song in its entirety hundreds of times, and gave those 100 records a new ranking, and that went into another database. And when that came out with the top 100, that's exactly how I stated it. I didn't change the order at all, because I think once you start doing that, it winds up being like a puzzle. You know, you shovel one piece, you got to shovel a lot of pieces. So there are some albums that were chosen in the initial 100 list that surprised me. There were some that I thought would be there that weren't there. And in the end, the final listing, I like the way it came out, but there were some records that you know, I thought would be much higher that, you know, they wound up toward the end, and some that wound up in the front. I was a little surprised at, but the way that the rankings came out, you know, I think it was the most honest way I could do it. You know, I basically tried approaching the entire process, going through the 200,000 records. I tried approaching it as if I'd never heard the record before, just completely open mind. I didn't think, oh, this guy should make it or anything like that. That's why there's some albums I thought would make it that didn't, because they didn't hold up to the test of time the way I thought they would. And there's some albums that maybe you know, you're taking a second or third look at years later, and you're like, wow, that's actually much better than I thought it was. So the ranking's kind of crazy, but I think in the end it actually came up with a pretty good list.
Hey, it looked good to me when I was looking at the book the other night, so it was very, very well done.
But a lot of music writers, I think they don't quite understand that you can't take a list like this.
Right.
You'd be, you'd have a hard time with the top 10, but you'd have a harder time with 90 to 100.
Right.
I mean, it is if you were picking it, the most difficult thing would be, who do you leave off that list?
Right, right.
You know, that's why you just couldn't do it.
Yeah,
you know?
I have enough trouble. I listen to radio station XPN out in at University of Pennsylvania, and every year they have this end of the year list. It's always different, but they always ask for like your top 10, and I have enough trouble doing that. So I can just imagine putting together a top 100 list of an entire
decade. And just like that, if you were picking them individually, you probably would be under some pressure in your head to try and balance out the years.
Right, right.
You know, and that's one good thing with this. You know, I mean, as it turns out, there were records from every year, but I mean, there's some years that have a lot more than others, and stuff like that. But I mean, it just I came up with a pretty fair list. I mean, I forget how many from 2010, but I think there was at least, you know, 5 releases in 2010. And I think that if you were picking them yourself, you probably would be a little bit harder on the most recent stuff. You know, saying, well, it hasn't lasted the test of time, so you don't know about that. But I mean, coming up with the mythology to do this, coming up with the math scheme and everything like that, that was pretty intense. I went through several different algorithms trying to figure out exactly what I was looking for. And then, you know, once a few of the sample ones came through, like, yeah, okay, that's what I'm looking for, you know. Because I was looking for great albums, not just great songs, you know. And that was the idea, because I think the album is dead, so I wanted to reward the ones where, you know, it wasn't like, oh, this is probably the best song of the decade, but the rest of the album is horrible. You know, I wanted something that, you know, somebody could actually put on the whole album and they're like, wow, this is really good stuff.
So you mentioned before you had some other ideas in the pipeline. Is it too early to even talk about that at this point, or do you have some other plans maybe for...
It's too early because I have two topics that nobody's written about, and I'm hoping to get the official go that I can be the person to do them, and trying to keep them ultra quiet until that. Yeah, one of them actually scared me because one showed up in a press release yesterday, but it wasn't about a book. It was a discussion, so that was good.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's
the next two things I'm looking at are actually national projects.
Excellent. And speaking nationally and locally, I guess kind of hard since you're so tied into the New Jersey music scene at this point not to get your thoughts on the passing of Clarence Clemons.
Yeah. Well, to me, I mean, I love Bruce, but Clarence to me was the band. He was anything that we ever called the Asbury Park music sound or the Jersey Shore sound, to me came from saxophone, and it all pretty much stemmed from Clarence. I mean, that's the music I grew up with, and I was at a music festival that day and came home and was checking emails, and that's when I found out, and you know, I immediately I started watching some of the tapes from the Promise box set. You know, one of the concerts from like '78, and I mean that's what I go back to. Those are the bootlegs I grew up with, and you know, just that sax that says Jersey Shore to me. You know,
right.
And I started feeling like this is probably what it was like when Paul McCartney announced he was leaving the Beatles. You know, this is the end, I think. Bruce tried replacing the band once, and it didn't really work out so well. And so I don't know exactly how many hits they can take. I mean, losing Danny a few years ago was a hard hit. Losing Clarence is, I don't think the fans will let him replace Clarence.
Right.
You know, I think he's going to have to go in a slightly different direction. And Clarence... you know, it's remarkable that we think of him as like a Jersey guy, but you forget just how many big time albums people had him on.
Right.
You know, artists that have nothing to do with the New Jersey sound wanted Clarence for that sax, and I put him on such a level that I always tell people, name a second rock and roll sax guy. It's hard.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, you know, when you think rock and roll and sax, that's the name. And, you know, it's a tremendous loss. And it's even worse that we thought he was getting better. You know,
yeah.
It was like you heard about the stroke and then you had some bad days. And then you heard his wife said, well, you know, he was doing better today. And then, you know, so it was like a roller coaster week. And, yeah, I mean, the whole area is just devastated. I live in Belmar where there was a little memorial on 10th and E.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're seeing the memorials at the Stone Pony, obviously, and everything. But and well, I mean, flags are at half mast today. You know, I mean, it's you know, it's hard. It's hard. I think it's even harder because the sax is a unique instrument. You know, I mean, you can be a brilliant guitarist. You're one of thousands of brilliant guitarists.
Right.
You know, he's probably one of dozens of great sax guys in the world. You know,
well said. Well, our guest has been Gary Ween, author of Are You Listening? A look at the top 100 CDs by New Jersey artists from 2001 to 2010. For more information about Gary, you can check out the links in the show notes. Gary, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Well, that concludes this episode of Tandem with the Random. Again, I'd like to thank Gary Ween for joining us to discuss Are You Listening? For more information on Gary and the book, please visit www.njmusic.org or click on the links in the show notes. And as usual, keep an eye on tandem.wordpress.com, follow us on Twitter at @twtrpodcast, or like Tandem with the Random on Facebook for show updates. And be sure to listen to the next installment of Tandem with the Random, which will be on Monday, July 11, 2011, because of the 4th of July holiday. Until then, this is Brian Kelly. Take care.
The thoughts and views expressed by the host of Tandem with the Random are not necessarily shared by guests of the program. Conversely, the thoughts and views expressed by guests of the podcast are not necessarily shared by the host. For more information and show notes for the podcast you just heard, please visit Tandem with the Random on the web at tandem.wordpress.com.